Let's Talk is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Let's Talk episode 42, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Howdy all, Father Corey Stika. Welcome to Let's Talk, our weekly SQPN community podcast. And of course, this is episode 42, which is the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything. Sorry, I had to throw the Douglas Adams quote in there. It's obligatory. I have to do it.
Absolutely.
This morning we've got a couple of priests are joining. The priests are taking over Let's Talk this week. First, you heard Father Chip is back again. How's it going, Father Chip?
Good to be back, Father Corey, as always. I look forward to the conversation.
Oh, yes, me too. It should be a very good conversation, I hope. And then Father Michael Gossett is also back. How's it going, Father Michael?
Very good. That's a lot of pressure for the episode, Life, the Universe, and Everything.
I know, right? Well, of course, we know what the real answer to the life, the universe, and everything is, and that's God. But, of us who are fans of Douglas Adams, we always get a kick every time 42 comes up. So, well, we do have two other priests other than myself on this morning, because we're going to talk about the priesthood. We're going to talk about what the priesthood means to us, because, you know, you look in the news and frankly, priests are getting a lot of bad press right now. You know, we see faithful priests who are persecuted for being faithful, sadly. You see priests who are accused, unfortunately, justly, of doing things that very much are unpriestly and are scandalous. But there's still hope in the priesthood. There's still, I hope that we, the three of us, at a minimum, can be examples of that hope that still exists in the priesthood. So, you know, kind of start out, now, Father Chip, how long have you been a priest?
I will be a priest 15 years in May, and it seems shorter than that. Every time I think about it, I'm thinking, wait a minute, it can't be 15 years. Seems like yesterday to me.
Yeah. How about you, Father Michael? How long have you been a priest?
It'll be 8 years in May, so little bit less, but 8 years, yeah.
Yep, and I'm kind of in the middle. I'm going to be 11 in June.
Well,
11
there you
years
go.
A priest in June. So we're kind of about the same length of time as a priest. We've been priests long enough that we've got some experience, that we've seen things, both good and bad.
Right.
But we're not the 40-year-old Monsignor that runs the parish, runs parish, even if he's not the pastor, things like that. You know, we're the working priests. We're the ones who are actually, you know, in the trenches. To begin with, Father Michael, why don't you talk about what led you to be a priest?
Sure. I grew up Catholic, a cradle Catholic from Steubenville, Ohio, and it was definitely a huge part of what my family did. I can't think of missing Mass more than once for some reason, or and my mom every night saying, say your prayers before you go to bed. So that was really a big part of my life right from the beginning, without even questioning it. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, and I didn't really consider the priesthood in any serious way until I was in college. Never really doubted my faith. It was just something that was kind of, it was like being Polish or being Italian or something, that it's just part of your life. And when I went to college, I went to a Methodist college in Ohio, and all of a sudden had all these friends who were Christians who weren't Catholic. And they had lots of questions for me. Catholicism to them was like fish fries and bingo. And maybe that's not totally inaccurate.
No, that's not totally inaccurate.
Yeah, that's right. It's right up there anyway.
Yeah. And so it was foreign to them. A lot of them were Methodists. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were non-denominational. So we were getting these great conversations. We were in Bible studies together. I played drums and for different praise and worship and things like that. Nice. And so really got to express my faith in a new way and made these great friends who encouraged me on to pray more. But it also made me discover my Catholicism in a new way. My roommate was Catholic, and together we just kind of dove in even more, going to the, there was a Newman group on campus. We had mass on campus every week, and started going to adoration eventually. And it kind of all culminated. I had gone to college to study journalism and to be in the marching band. That was my other criteria for college. But we went to the March for Life my junior year, and that was the first time I'd ever gone. And the whole thing just made me happy to be Catholic. It sort of blew me away. The vigil mass the night before, it was the only time I've ever sat in a pew at that mass and kind of got to see what was going on. And then the actual march that day, to see so many priests and religious really struck me. And I came home kind of with this inkling in my head that this was telling me something. And it was actually, I was talking to my brother on AOL Instant Messenger. You guys, I'm sure, remember that.
Ancient of days.
When I talk to high school students, there's sort of a blank stare for AIM. My brother told me he was thinking about being a priest. And really, that opened the door for me. And once that door was opened, it didn't go away. And so when I was graduating from college, I went right into seminary. And my brother's a priest for the diocese as well. Now he was ordained a few years later. And so haven't really looked back. Once God kind of put that idea in my head, it just stayed and it got stronger and was confirmed when I went to seminary. And here I am almost 8 years later.
That's awesome. Now, how many siblings do you have?
There are three of us. So there's me and my brother and my sister. She's not a nun. That's usually the question that, that gets asked a lot.
I assume your parents were very supportive of you and your brother going in.
Yeah, they were pretty great. There was definitely the understanding, you can go to seminary, we support you. If you don't feel like this is for you, come home, it's okay. And that's a really liberating thing. There was absolute support, but there was also, there was no pressure of feeling like we were going to be a disappointment if either of us decided we weren't supposed to be doing this.
That's good. That's good that they supported you both ways. And I think that's kind of an important message for, if we want to talk a little bit later about what people can do to support vocations, that's one of them, is support them both going in and if they feel like they discern out, so how about you, Father Chip? What led you to the priesthood?
Well, it was a long road. I felt the call to the priesthood when I was younger. My family went to mass every week, as well. I wasn't a Catholic school kid. I did go to mass every week, my parents and my brothers. So I was confirmed at 12, and the priest, asked me at 12 to be a Eucharistic minister. And I said, what now? he said, yeah, you're tall enough. And, cause I was tall for my age, and he's like, you're tall enough. People won't know the difference. They'll think you're a man. I said, yeah, if you say so. So yeah, I did it. And he encouraged me along the lines of my faith. And I ended up in the youth group, as most kids do. That are kind of active in their church, and the adult leaders there were very, very good, very faithful Catholics who, gave us fun activities, but gave us, worship activities too. And this kind of drew me closer to the church, but like, I'm sure a lot of kids, unlike Father Michael, seems to have been so close to the church his whole life. I drifted away in college, and I didn't really give it a thought. I thought about getting married. I dated, and I had some girlfriends in college, and I just, went about my business. I graduated and I went into the work world here in Boston, where I am, and I worked for some real estate companies and stuff. Well, anyway, I got sick, and I had this really kind of tough infection in my lower leg. Sounds familiar to my current situation, but yes.
Yeah.
I ended up having this infection, and I ended up in the hospital, and I just said to God, you know, I'm not asking you to cure me so that I can be a priest. I just said, please just show me where you want me to be. And then he just kind of kept on putting priests in front of me, you know, whether it was my parish priest or, you know, priest on the, it's just random priest on the street. I started going to daily mass over it. There's a tall building in Boston named after an insurance company I won't name, but they had a chapel in their kind of retail area run by the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. And I started going to daily mass there, and I started talking with the priest there, and he was my age. And it was the first time I had met a priest who was my age. And we ended up, you know, sort of having lunch together from that time to time and talking about the priesthood. And he just, he encouraged me, and it was funny. He said, I think you have a vocation to the priesthood, he said, but not to religious life. And I thought, oh, okay. All right. That's interesting, you know? And so he pushed me to the diocesan vocation director, and I went on a retreat. The Cardinal Archbishop of at the time, Cardinal Law led the retreat, preached the retreat, was at every meal and met with us. And then I met with him for an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I found both intimidating and a blessing. And, he said to me, at the end of the hour, he said, I think you have a vocation to the priesthood. I think you should talk to Father Flagg, who was the vocation director at the time. I said, okay. So I did, and I went to the seminary. 6 years later, ordained, then first assignment, and here I am 15 years down the road. It's been great. You know, ups and downs like everybody else, but that's life. I mean, married people have ups and downs, and,
right.
You know, just dealing with my current medical situation, and it's getting better, and, you know, and I, but it's good. It's good. I've enjoyed every, well, not every minute, but most every minute.
Oh, yeah. I think most priests can agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, my story is very similar to yours, Father Chip. You know, when I was in high school is when we did confirmation at the time. You know, we would do it junior or senior year, depending. Because I lived in a small parish, it was only done every other year. The bishop didn't come every year, just like we do now. We still, in the very rural parts of this diocese, like, say, here, we do confirmation every other year. Difference is now we've gone to the restored order where we do it at 7.
Oh,
right,
wow.
For First Communion. And we've done that. My diocese has done that since about the year 2000. But when I went through confirmation in the early 90s, it was high school age. And during that year, one of our instructors was the mother of a classmate. And three times during that year, she told me, didn't ask, she told me that I was going to be a priest. And three times during that year, I went, not going to happen. Nope. Not, you know, I got other things to do, you know, wife and kids and all that are part of my future. And the priesthood isn't. Of course, I had to correct that later, but I had to eat crow on that one later. But, I graduated from high school, and I really hadn't really any kind of idea what I wanted to do. So I went into the Air Force. I decided, you know what? Military service is a good thing, and the Air Force is the best branch. And it is. I'm sorry to anybody else who had made the mistake of serving elsewhere.
Navy.
Went into the Air Force and worked for the Air Force as a computer guy, doing first programming and then more computer administration, and ended up deploying to Saudi Arabia for 5 months. Sunny Saudi Arabia in the middle of winter is actually a pretty good thing, because it was 70 degrees and sunny Christmas Day, wow. Which coming from Montana felt really good. Of course, it was 102 when I left May 2nd. So, it was a little warm there by the time I left. But as I was there, I got to know one of the chaplains. Oh, excuse me, the welfare officers. They're not allowed to be Catholic. Priests, you know, any Christians are not allowed to be chaplains because that is a religious title. And of course, Saudi Arabia doesn't allow Christianity.
Ah.
So they are welfare officers.
Wow.
So, but of course, we had mass every week and everything, and daily mass and things like that, because he was a chaplain on the base that I was stationed at. And so I got to know him a little bit. getting active in the chapel. Because before I went to Saudi Arabia, I had kind of become a more Sunday than not Catholic. And I think we know Catholics like this. They go to Mass more Sundays than not. That doesn't mean they go to Mass a lot of Sundays. But I got to know him, got to get involved in the chapel there a little bit. And just it helped, too. He was a younger priest. I would guess he was probably maybe in his 40s, you know. So that helped quite a bit that he was, you know, I was 21 at that time, so it was still old. He was still older than me, but he was still a much younger priest than the ones I'd usually seen, who had a lot of gray in their hair and so on. Well, got back from Saudi Arabia and was getting ready to get out of the military, and I was going to make all kinds of big bucks being a computer guy doing computer administration, because that was right in the middle of the IT bubble, the tech bubble, where if you could spell the word computer 9 times out of 10, you could get a job working on computers. And so I knew I was going to make lots of money and get, you know, find a wife and get married, et cetera, et cetera. Well, God kind of laughed at that. After I got out of the military, I was worked first for a year for MasterCard as a contractor, and then back on the same Air Force base I was stationed at outside of St. Louis as a contractor, as a civilian contractor, and had made a friend through my local parish who was an officer on the base. Well, he invited me to start attending daily Mass on base. Because we worked like a building apart, and then the chapel was a half a block away. It was just right there, right in kind of in the middle part of the base. So I started attending daily Mass with him, and kind of taking a long story and shrinking it down, that the chaplain there at that base, who, by the way, was a priest from Boston.
Of course he was.
You know, he invited me to go to the military archdiocese discernment retreat in D.C., which was like, cool, trip to D.C., I can do this. Well, I went, and it really got the wheels churning. It really got me thinking about it. I had been thinking about it a little bit, you know, kind of been that whisper in the back of my mind, you know, that you should think about this. You know, every time I'd get to a life decision, I was getting out of the military, and you should think about the priesthood, and changing jobs, you should think about the priesthood. Well, eventually, I started following up on it. Anonymously, of course, because by this time the internet was out and you can find all kinds of great information on the internet without people actually knowing you're looking. Especially back then, before the time of Facebook, tracking you on everything. But eventually I took the step and got a hold of my then vocation director for this diocese. You know, I was still living in Southern Illinois outside of St. Louis, but I knew if I was going to be a priest, I was going to be a priest for Montana. I'm from Montana. This is where I feel home. And so I get a hold of him, and I come home to visit my parents one time for Christmas, and I go down to Billings and meet him and visit with him. And next thing I know, by that fall, the fall of 2000, I'm entering the seminary. Now, I didn't have a college degree, so I had to do the 8 years. I had to do 4 years of college seminary and then go on to the theology studies, which I think was a wonderful experience because I had that much more formation, that much more time to prepare myself and to think about it. My first year at college seminary, I kept looking at the job search websites for computer jobs. I figured, you know, if nothing else, if this doesn't work, I could go anywhere in the country I want to go. If I want to go to Houston, Texas, I can go to Houston, Texas. If I want to go to Florida, if I want to go to Boston, I want, you know, wherever, I can go anywhere because I've already basically packed up and moved once. I can do that again. But I kept with it, and through discernment and study and everything, you know, it became more and more clear that this is where God wants me and where I need to go. And so 2008, I was ordained. And it's been quite the adventure since. You know, Father Chip, you mentioned in the beginning, you know, the 15 years seems like it's a blink of an eye. And I kind of joke sometimes my 10 going on 11 years, it's been that fast, and sometimes I can count every minute of that 11 years.
I know. I do you remember who the priest was in the Air Force, what his name was? Do you remember his name from Boston?
I don't. I wish I did. I'll have
I
to go
back
and... I wish
you did, too. I'd love to know who that guy was, because that was great.
I just happened to remember that he was from Boston originally, for whatever reason.
Sure. And Michael, I gotta ask you a question. I've been wondering about this since you started talking. You grew up in Steubenville, Ohio. How heck did you not end up at Franciscan University.
Well, I spent a lot of time there. I cleaned a lot of their bathrooms in the summer in high school. my mom works in the library there.
Uh-huh.
25 years this year, so she's been there for a long time. And it really, it very much felt like I needed to go away for college. It was where I was.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like I really discovered Franciscan after the fact, coming back for festivals of praise and
sure.
going up there to pray and things like that. And now it's, I took a class there, so I kind of went to school there.
I think if you take one class, they consider you, every university considers you an alumni, so.
Yeah,
you know, so, I think
which means they can send you the recruitment.
That's right.
They can send stuff. You a request for money. Yeah,
that's exactly. Right.
So are you a priest for the Steubenville Diocese then?
I am. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, in the Steubenville Diocese, it's kind of associated with Franciscan, but it goes 4 hours south of here, so it's a big chunk of Ohio. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Ohio's got quite a bit of rural area too that's out there, so.
Yeah, I lived in Ohio for a year when I was a kid. My dad took a job in Columbus, and we lived in a place called Westerville. And
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, just a little north, I think. Yeah, a little north of Columbus. And they had a Methodist school there. Otterbein, I think it was. So, interesting. It's such a big place, such a big state. It's such a wonderful place, too. I love Ohio. So I root for Ohio State, by the way, just so you know.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. No. Compared to Montana, every state is small other than like Texas and Alaska. But
that's true.
No,
that's true.
But
especially
when you both look back at your priesthood to date. And again, we're all three of us are priests where we've got some experience. We're not just fresh out of the seminary. The oil isn't still wet on our hands, as we commonly will say. What are some of the joys that you've experienced as priests? Father Michael, why don't you go first? You know, what are some of the things that you've seen and experienced as a priest that really has helped you say, you know, this is why I became a priest?
Yeah, it's good to look for those moments that are kind of like, oh, yeah, this is the reason. There's obviously big ones like, I mean, celebrating Mass. I love hearing confessions and confession. I think probably is the most surprising and most joyful thing of the priesthood to me that you don't really know until you experience hearing confessions, what a powerful moment it is. And so that's really stuck with me. I would say I've been privileged since I've been ordained to work in high schools in our diocese. So I've been a high school chaplain in one school for 4 years, and now I'm 4 years in a high school in Steubenville, which is my alma mater. And, that's been really powerful for me to work with the students there.
Excellent.
It's so easy to kind of like look down on younger generations, and I hear it. It's like those kids in their phones, those kids and whatever. But I've just been really blessed to see God working in their lives and them saying yes. And so that's right now at Catholic Central where I work, we have adoration and praise and worship twice a month. And that really grew out of we proposed it and students wanted it, and they show up, like 40 or 50 kids show up every time at night after school. And it's just kind of people be like, oh, you're doing a really good thing there. Like, well, God's basically doing it. And these kids are into it. They say yes. And to me, that's a real joy of the priesthood, is seeing how, despite I don't know what I'm doing all the time. I'm sure you guys can say the same thing, despite our weaknesses or just the things that we lack, that God works through the priesthood. And if you show up and you're faithful and give of yourself, then great things really do happen.
Absolutely. How about you, Father Chip?
Well, I mean, I hate to be an echo chamber, but obviously the sacraments are the most joyous things for me. I mean, I love celebrating the Eucharist. I love hearing confessions. You know, I like, as sad as it is, I like being there for families at funerals, and you know, and the occasional wedding, is usually a source of joy. Baptisms, you can't beat, because everybody there is just so happy, and the babies are just so, you know, ready for life. They, you know, you look at them and you're like, oh my God, they have all their lives ahead of them, you know?
Yep.
And so I get a kick out of that stuff, and it's what brings me the joy. I mean, I was a pastor for 10 years, and, you know, that was a lot of administrative work that I really, yeah. really, really, and I can't stress this enough, really hated. And so, you know, but getting, every time I had an opportunity to do something priestly, you know, my day would pick up and my joy would be mm-hmm. more complete. And it was just those opportunities to be with families. Those are really the moments that I enjoy the most. I mean, I think if you don't enjoy being with families, and if you don't enjoy celebrating the sacraments, then something's wrong. You know, I mean, that's right. To me, that's a sign of something wrong. And I really that's the part I love. I'm a little jealous of Father Michael. I would have loved as a young priest to have been working with high school kids and thinking, you know, being able to sort of affect, you know, change and, you know, work for vocations and everything. I think that would have been something else, but God had other plans, and so did my bishop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I think those moments are just, you know, they're the best. And I think that's what I like the most. And I'm in a parish now where I'm sort of in recovery mode for my current illness and injuries. And it's a great place with a great pastor who's let me do as much or as little as I can. They have an adoration chapel, 24 hours a day, adoration nice. Chapel. It's a great place. Wonderful people. The people are faithful. You see people go to confession on Saturdays. They want to go to confession, mm-hmm. you know, other times of the week. And, you know, it's just a great place to be. And it's giving me kind of a, you know, recharge on, you know, the things that I, you know, wanted to do when I was in the seminary, you know, and just like be sure. with people and work with them. So, you know, I think that's kind of where I get the joy. And I'm sure you guys do too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think all three of us basically, you know, we became priests because we want to celebrate the sacraments. We want to serve Christ. We want to be with his people. You know, we found our joy in that. You know, I agree 100% with baptisms. I think one of the funniest ones I ever had was, it was a boy that was a little bit older, you know, a little bit older as in, you know, 6 months, 8 months old, maybe as old, quote unquote, year. And by the way, you know, baptism should be, you know, as soon as possible, you
right.
know, but of course a lot of families don't for reasons. And, so this boy was old enough that he was aware of his surroundings, you know, as they get older. And he was a very smiley baby, very smiley baby. Anytime someone would look at him, he'd smile. So the whole time as I'm doing the baptismal rite, they're holding him and I'd look at him and he'd smile. And it got hard to keep going with the rite because I just wanted to laugh. You know,
right.
just that joy that a smiley baby has is infectious.
It sure is.
And so I'm trying to do the ritual and I'm breaking up laughing as I'm doing this ritual. It's just a wonderful moment. And the family's laughing and the parish is laughing. I mean, it's just such a wonderful thing to see that joy of a child. And that's for me has been a great experience as a priest, because I really was never around children. It was me and my brother, and we're, you know, only a couple of years apart. So to have, you know, younger families around, and all my cousins are kind of in similar age group that we'd be around and everything. So to be around little children is not really a part of my experience before being a priest. And so to be around, you know, these little children, especially, you know, above toddler, but below school age, kind of that, you know, that age group is so much fun because they're just joy at that mm-hmm. point. And again, be around the kids for religious ed and things like that. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And again, like you both said, celebrating Mass and celebrating the confirmation has been a wonderful thing. And to be able to be with families for funerals, as sad as it is. And of course, we don't have a lot of weddings out here because like most places, the number of couples getting married period is going down, but also being married in the church has gone down quite a bit. So I haven't had as much experience with that as maybe either of you have had, but it's still a wonderful experience when it does happen. And I haven't had any bridezillas, at least. So that's been a positive thing.
That's a positive.
Very happy for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, God willing, it won't either, but you know how that goes.
Well, Father Corey, your situation is so different than ours as far as like being in a extremely rural area. And I imagine that the demands of ministry must be different than ours, especially, I'll be honest, I don't know much about Steubenville. I don't know how urban or suburban it is, but even in the suburbs of Boston, you know, it's pretty, people are pretty, well, let's just call them urbane. How about that? Right. And there's tons of them, you know? And so you have, our community, our greater Boston area is probably 2-3 million people easy, right? So,
right.
What's your greater area? Like 1,000? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Malta itself, the town I live in, is 2,000.
Wow.
The entire county is less than 4,000.
Amazing. Wow.
That's amazing. By the way, it's the land space bigger than, you know, like Rhode Island.
Right. Right.
So, so it is a different environment than you'll find in the cities, you know. For better or worse, you really can't hide in a small town like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to run into parishioners. You know, I always comment, in the big cities, yeah, even Billings, which is 100,000 people, I have a feeling if a priest really wanted to, he could hide.
Right.
You know, no one would know that he's a priest, except for maybe the occasional parishioner you might run into at the grocery store or something like that. But here in these smaller towns like Malta, oh, no, they know you're a priest. You know, most people know that you're a priest. And that's good, obviously.
Yep.
If you're, you know, if you're a good witness, because then your parishioners see you on a regular basis as that good witness. But it's also difficult because here's kind of a news flash. There are conflicts in parishes.
Oh, no.
And sometimes the priest is in the middle of it. And when you have that parishioner that maybe you're having difficulty with at that particular moment in time, yeah, you suddenly do see them at the grocery store and at the restaurant and here and there. And you can't really hide from them sometimes, you know? So
yeah,
that does make it a challenge.
That's really interesting because you probably know there's definitely the temptation. Sometimes I just want to be anonymous. I just want to go off, relax, do whatever it is, but you're never off. And I find myself, maybe you can empathize with this. I make eye contact with people walking down the street because I wear clerical attire and smile at people and things like that. But then I find myself doing it even if I'm not dressed as a priest and people just think you're a weirdo.
you mean you're not walking through this busy suburban area or urban area with your head down where no one can see what you're looking at? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's great. Yeah. I wish, even here, it's hard to some, if you're the pastor, it can be of a parish up here. It's hard to hide in towns. I mean, you really can't, even if you want to, you can't. It's people just know who you are. And I gotta say, that's a funny first experience of, when you're first ordained and you're in a parish and you're there for a year and then you go to a restaurant and someone recognizes you, even though you're in civilian clothes, so to speak. Yep. And you're like, really? They recognized me? I thought I was hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you realize, oh, well, let's skip that second glass of wine. That way they won't be saying anything about me, you know, because, you know, you got to be careful. You got to, you know, you can't, your life is not your own. And, you know, so you're always a witness, even when you're out with your friends having a glass of wine and a steak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that could be the motto of the priesthood is that your life is not your own.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it really is. We did not, can't speak for either of you, but I know for myself, I didn't become a priest to make myself rich and famous. That's for sure.
No.
If you've ever looked at the salaries of priests, there is no rich involved.
And there seems to be a real danger when you do get into those things for a priest.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there's so much. I'm sure we could all name priests who have fallen because they've gotten into that position of fame or have led people astray, you know, and obviously we're not here to name names. It's something to be a priest is to recognize with humility that we don't serve ourselves. And it is a danger of the priesthood, you know, because you do get the little old ladies. Oh, Father, you're so wonderful. Here's a plate of cookies. You know, Father, you're so wonderful. And, you know, and you also get the little old ladies that, Father, you need to leave. You
know? Oh, yeah. And sometimes they're not little old ladies. Sometimes they're middle-aged men who, you know, just want you to leave. Get out. Yeah. They think they can do a better job than you. Have you had that experience yet?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, in some cases they probably can. That's the funny part.
I know.
You know, but it's like any other thing involving humans. You know, there's going to be ups and downs, positives and negatives. There's, you know, we've got our skills, we've got our gifts. You know, one thing I've discovered over the past couple of years is bookkeeping is not one of mine.
Yeah.
I can keep the bills paid, but that's about as far as it goes. But there are other things that we have, you know, the ability to reach out to people, the ability to be there with people at their moments of joy and their moments of sorrows. And of course, there's politics and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the priesthood is a very varied lifestyle. Let's put it that way.
I think that's an enjoyable part of it, is that you don't necessarily know what to expect from day to day. And
exactly,
it's never really sort of a drudgery that there's all because you're dealing. It is very much about people, and you're dealing with what they're going through and kind of walking through their lives with them. And for me, that's what it keeps it, not just like a fruitful ministry, but it's what makes it humanly interesting, that you're not you're not just kind of like pushing a button because it needs to be pushed. Right. You're walking with people in their concrete situations.
Well, I wondered why my former pastor, the pastor of the parish I was at when I began my discernment, why he laughed when I asked him what a typical day in the life of a priest was like.
Yeah.
I know now.
Yeah, you do.
There is no typical day.
Exactly. And that was always something that I you know, I wanted to know, you know, especially when I was discerning the priesthood, and every priest you asked laughed. It didn't matter who, if they're the pastor, or parochial vicar, or chaplain somewhere, they laughed because they knew that there was no typical day. And, you know, and they often would sell you that, and you'd be like, oh, come on, really? And then when you experience it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you might have your plans of, okay, well, I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to celebrate Mass,
right,
and I'm going to pray and I'm going to do this work and I'm going to go here. And then all of a sudden the phone rings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or you get an email or something happens. You know.
Doorbell rings.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Or the person after Mass who just says, can I just talk to you for a minute? And that ends up being an hour.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Hey, Father, I just got a quick question.
Right. No, you don't.
There's never a quick question in the priesthood. Well, once in a while, I guess once in a while there is. And usually it's like, hey, are you coming to the fish fry or something?
But right, right.
Easy one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take the easy one.
So if you guys, and I'm sure you guys have talked to people who are discerning, how would you, what would be your elevator pitch? You know, that elevator pitch, if you've got 30 seconds to a minute to describe what the priesthood is about. Father Chip, what would you give as your elevator pitch?
I would just say, if you love serving God and you love people and you love the Eucharist, then I think this is something that you can definitely do. And that's how I would, I guess, in 30 seconds, if I have that short a period of time, that's what I would say.
Sure. How about you, Father Michael?
I'm our vocation director for our diocese, so I find myself doing this a lot. But
there you go. So you got it down pat. You're perfect when they ask.
But for me, it's very much if you want to live like Jesus, in that you're laying down your life for people in lots of many different ways, and we're not out looking for already done saints, priests, or real people who are in the process of becoming holy. And if that's the way that God wants to do it for you, you can do it. It is a possible thing.
Oh, amen.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, I would very much echo a lot of what both of you said, that it, you know, if you're looking for a life to serve and not to be served, if you're looking for a life of being there for Christ and being Christ to the people,
mm-hmm. right?
You know, and it's something I think we tend to forget as priests, is that when we're up there at the altar, it's not Father Chip, Father Corey, Father Michael,
right?
It's Christ. We are serving in His place. When we are there with the sacrament of confession, we're there in His place. It's not us. And that is one of the falls that priests can get into, is it becomes more about the priest than it does about Christ, you know? And so it's good for us to be reminded of that as well. You know, we need that reminder on a regular basis that it's not about us. Is there anything else either of you would like to share about the priesthood?
I think a big thing, the priesthood seems so mysterious to people on the outside of it, whether they are discerning it or just parishioners, that they don't know what you do all day. They don't know kind of how you spend your life. But it's not so different from marriage in a lot of ways, in that you're focused on others. And just right. like marriage can be hard, the priesthood can be hard, but it can be really joyful when you pour yourself out that way for other people. And I'm always surprised at the shock. Like, if I go to a movie or I'm at a restaurant, I'm like, oh, Father, you're here.
Yeah. Do that once in a while.
Priesthood people and they do things. And it's especially if you feel like that's a call, as the stories both of you guys told, that go talk to a priest. Don't be afraid to ask them what it's like. And if it's something that's worthwhile for them, that's a very huge way of seeing, maybe this is something for me.
Right.
Yeah. I echo that. And I think that, you know, it is important I think it's great when people kind of see me at the movies or at the supermarket or something like that, because they see that your life is like theirs. And I think the more we can show people that our lives are like theirs, it's a good thing. I mean, is it exactly like theirs? Obviously not. But, you know, we, like Father Michael said, it's a vocation. And so you have, you know, there are similarities. And if you think you'd be a good father and a good husband, then you might be a good priest too. And I think that's, you know, you just need to search it, discern it, and figure it out. Right. And I guess that's what I'd say to a young man, you know, if I had a little bit more time than 30 seconds.
Well, very, yeah. I mean, I agree with all of that. You know, one thing I was thinking too is just to ask our parishioners, ask those we deal with on a daily basis, you know, have patience with us. You know,
right.
we are human as well. You know, we have our sins, we have our failings. You know, again, so many sins of the priesthood are in display when we look in the papers, you know, especially Boston scandals and all that, you know, movies yep. made about it and all that. But we all have our small sins too. We all have our failings. We all have our times when we're just not on, when we say something or do something, we know later we look back and go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, I probably just hurt that person because of my actions. And again, it can be big or small. Have patience with us. Pray for us. We need it. My pick this week is going to be something, you know, related to that for praying for priests, and we need prayers. Your pastor needs prayers. Your bishop, who is a priest, our bishops are priests first. They need prayers. You know, we need those of us who you hear on SQPN and other podcasts and other media forums. We need prayers that we'll be faithful servants of Christ and faithful servants of His people. So pray for us. That's kind of how I would close off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very good. And a good discussion. And, you know, obviously there's more we could talk about for the priesthood. Like I said, we could talk for hours about this wonderful, difficult, challenging, glorious ministry that we all share in.
We could.
But at this time, I'd like to take a quick break to thank everyone once again for listening to Let's Talk and all the other SQPN podcasts. You know, we put these on because, first of all, because we enjoy talking, we enjoy sharing these things we talk about, whether it is Doctor Who and Star Trek, or technology in the case of Secrets of Technology, or again, Let's Talk, whatever, anything and everything we can share. And we hope that you're enjoying them as well. If you are enjoying them, please do, you know, like and subscribe to our podcast, the SQPN Facebook page, or the SQPN YouTube channel, if you're listening to us that way. Of course, you know, you can give us reviews and ratings on iTunes. You know, the higher the rating, the better, of course. If you really like what we're doing, give us 5 stars and leave a comment why you enjoy what we're doing. That helps us to get our message out to the world, that because we are here as not just myself as a priest, but the entire SQPN community is here to share the gospel while in conversation with the culture. And your comments and your ratings help us do that by getting our message out to a wider audience. Obviously you can share our actual shows. If you like this show, please share it on Facebook and so on. You can also help our SQPN mission by supporting us through Patreon, you know, giving us some money each month to keep our work going, because of course we are a nonprofit, and most of our work is done by volunteers, but we still have money that we have to pay for bills to keep things running. This week, I'd like to thank some of those who have supported us through Patreon: Robert H., Daniel W., Harry R., Johnny S., and Layla L. Thank you, and thank all of our Patreons for your support, keeping this going. We also need other volunteers. We need people to help us with our audio editing, as I do with Let's Talk, and Dom does with pretty much every other podcast we do. Volunteers to help post things on our website and so on, and other forms of volunteer. Please contact Dom, or you can email letstalk@sqpn.com if you're interested in helping with that. Especially audio edit, people to edit our podcast is of great need. If you're familiar with Adobe Audition, it would help a lot to just a couple hours a week to help us get these shows edited. So thank you again to those who support us, and thank you for those who are interested in helping with volunteering to keep our mission going. So now we're going to switch over to our pick of the week. You know, every week we choose, for those who haven't listened to Let's Talk, every week we choose something to share as part of our to share with the community. So, Father Chip, what would you like to share this week?
I'd like to share an upcoming television event on the History Channel called Jesus, His Life. I did a review of the first episode told through the eyes of Joseph for CatholicDigest.com. And that show, that series is coming up, I believe, the end of this month on the History Channel. Check your local listings for that. But it's the story of Jesus told through the eyes of the people around him. So this first one was Joseph. There'll be Mary. There'll be there'll be Caiaphas. There'll be Peter. Right. There'll be John the Baptist, and so on. And so they'll continue to show the life of Jesus through that. Now, that being said, there are people that work on this show or in this show who are sort of weirdly seeming secular biblical scholars. And so they have, some of them have a certain viewpoint, which wouldn't be what a believer would believe. But
sure,
there are many people of faith on this who give their thoughts and opinions. And anytime you can see a kind of a new telling of the life of Jesus, I think it's worth your time. And so it's called Jesus's Life, and it's on the History Channel.
Excellent. Excellent. It'll be worth checking it out. Hopefully it's not like some of those that they work to prove that Jesus didn't exist. So that sounds good.
No, it's not that.
I always joke about that. Every Easter time, those shows seem to come out where Jesus really didn't exist. He was made up. Not really. Brother Michael, do you have a pick for us this week?
Yeah. Reaching back to sort of my early discernment when I was in the seminary is a book by Pope St. John Paul II, Gift in Mystery, that he wrote on the 50th anniversary of his priestly ordination. And it's just kind of it's not a huge book. It's not very long, but it dives into his thoughts on the priesthood and sort of his origins, the origins of his vocation from his family and the different devotions they practiced. And I just always found it very sort of inspiring. As somebody thinking about the priesthood, it's nice to see, you know, John Paul II. He was in that place at the same time where he had to figure this out. He had to learn to pray and learn to see what the priesthood was going to be for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he definitely was a great example of what the priesthood looks like.
Yeah, so. Totally.
And in excellent. A tougher time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so. Yeah, we think we have difficulties here, at least in the United States, you know, try serving under a
Nazi regime
and then the Russians too, right. The Soviets.
Exactly.
So, excellent. Great pick. My pick is, as I kind of hinted to it, it's about praying for priests. And it's a document or a really kind of a booklet that came out in 2007. So it's been out for about 12 years. It's from the Congregation for the Clergy from Rome, Eucharistic Adoration for the Sanctification of Priests and Spiritual Maternity. This is it's a great little pamphlet. Like I said, it's like 40 pages. I'll link to it where you can download the PDF of it. It's about what lay people can do to pray for their priests. You know, there's this idea of giving, you know, spending time before our Lord, seeking that he will bless his priests, you know, and because we serve Jesus and we serve his people. And so this is a way that the people can serve us by praying for us. And there's a special emphasis of spiritual motherhood, that women in our parish adopt us as spiritual mothers. Now, this isn't to say that they're going to be acting like our mothers. I think sometimes we feel like we've got, you know, a number of other mothers with our parishioners, especially, again, yeah. older women tend to like to mother their priests.
Yeah, don't encourage them to do that.
No, we're not encouraging that, although we do like cookies, as most of us are overweight show.
Dangerous. But
a little too much.
Yeah, homemade cookies are good, but this spiritually adopting them, that they will be mothers to us as the Blessed Mother, Mary, is our mother. You know, we call her our queen, but we also call her the mother of priests, because she has adopted us as her children, because we serve her son. So it's a great resource for understanding the need for prayer and how to pray for priests, and it's a beautiful little pamphlet too. So booklet too. So I would encourage everyone to look at, not just women, but all to look at how we can be prayed for. So that we can serve as well as we can. Cause of course that's, again, we need prayers to help our ministries as we seek to live as Christ did.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you both again for coming on. Father Chip, where can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, certainly they can find me on Twitter at Chines, at Chines, and some of my review work at CatholicDigest.com.
Excellent. And Father Michael?
On Twitter at FR Mike Gossett, Father Mike Gossett, and also FatherMichaelG.com. I try to post all my homily texts there.
Excellent. Excellent. Father Corey Stika, again, you can find my homilies at frcorey.org. I post the recordings of them. I'm on Facebook, Father Corey Stika. Twitter is frcoreystika. And of course, you can find me here on Let's Talk, Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, and many other podcasts, it seems like, here on SQPN. But these are the big three. If you have any feedback for this episode or any episode of Let's Talk, please send us an email at letstalk@sqpn.com. Thank you again for listening, and God bless.